Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio today is Dr. Bob Gerlach, and on the phone I have Amy Seitz with the Alaska Farm Bureau. And today we're going to chat about this wild sheep and goat MOVI issue. I'm sure I'm saying all the things wrong, and Dr. Gerlach will correct me. But before we jump into that topic, I just want to remind folks that coming up on Saturday, we have our Drink Beer Save Farms summer concert with the Ken Peltier Band. And I want to let people know that tickets have, there's been a huge rush of tickets in the last 24 hours, and they're going pretty fast. So if you want to join us Saturday evening at 6 p.m., jump on brownpapertickets.com quickly and get your tickets. Without further ado, welcome Dr. Gerlach and Amy to the show. Thank you both for being here.
Well, good morning, and thanks for having us here.
Yes, thanks so much.
Yeah, so this issue has been a hot topic for a number of months now, this idea, and I don't even want to say what the idea is. I'll let you guys, the experts, talk about it. I thought how we would start the show, Amy, is you could give us a little bit of background information from the Farm Bureau's perspective about what the issue is and why it became an issue for the ag industry, et cetera, and then we'll kind of jump into Dr. Gerlach answering some of the here and now questions with where we're at now. So, Amy, take it away. What is this issue that we want to update folks on?
Well, it it's something that the western states down in the lower 48 have been dealing with for over a decade. But it came up to Alaska in 2015. As many people know, there was a proposal submitted to the Board of Game that would have removed domestic sheep and goats from the clean list, and then put several other restrictions in place like double fencing and permitting, etc., which obviously got the Farm Bureau's attention.
Yeah, got a lot of people excited.
Removal from the clean list. There's still not a clear answer on what that means, but any additional costs we put on our farmers up here just makes it even harder to have a viable business.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, we definitely got involved back then. It was a very extreme approach to something that we hadn't even talked about up here.
Right.
It hadn't been on anyone's radar. We have learned a lot over the last couple of years about it. Obviously nobody wants to see anything happen to our doll sheep or mountain goats, but I think we need to get answers before finding a solution.
Yeah, find out if there really is a problem or not. So to be clear, the idea was that perhaps domestic sheep and goats in Alaska carried or could carry a disease that could be detrimental to the wild sheep and goat population of Alaska. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, and the MOV, which is the pathogen that is on everyone's mind right now, it's not even a disease. And Dr. Gerlach can go into more detail. He's more of the expert on that side of things. But, it's, from what I understand, it's a fairly new pathogen. So there's a lot of questions, or there's a lot of things we don't understand about it. But the thought is that, contact from a wild sheep or goat to a domestic sheep or goat would, infect the wild herds and, eventually cause die-offs.
Yeah. And so you mentioned this. This is an issue in the western states. So tell me a little bit about that. And it was the Wild Sheep Foundation that kind of brought the issue up in Alaska. So what's going on down in the lower 48 with this disease and domestic flocks?
Yeah, and I know down in the western states, MOV is the current pathogen they're looking at. It's gone through other pasturellas and other pathogens that everyone thought was the cause. So they've been learning down there too, but. Down there, there's grazing leases on public lands,
right.
So there's a lot more contact
or potential contact between domestic animals
contact.
And yeah.
But there's also a lot of other stressors down there that our wild sheep don't have. There's sharing lands that we don't have up here. Our sheep are fenced in.
Yeah.
For our sheep and goats. So I know down there they're still trying to figure out how to deal with it. How do they keep healthy wildlife? How do they how do they maintain both wild and domestic sheep and goats?
Yeah, sure. So, Dr. Gerlach, we're saying MOV, MOVI, MOVI. What are we talking about? What is this pathogen that we're talking about?
Yeah, the pathogen is a bacteria called Mycoplasma ovum pneumonia, and it's a like Amy said, a relatively newly identified pathogen associated with pneumonia outbreaks in wild sheep.
Okay.
And the concern is that where they've had some of these outbreaks, and they are sporadic, it's not widespread across the all populations there, but where they had it, that there have been some severe morbidity and mortality or sickness and death. To the point where some of these populations of wild sheep don't seem like they're going to be able to recover from
it. Okay. Yeah. And in what states has it, have we seen the impact in the lower 48?
Almost all the western states that have bighorn sheep located in there, and as well as southern British Columbia.
Okay. All right. So again, this was an issue that had sprung up in the lower 48, and the Wild Sheep Foundation there, and I don't even really know much about them and their organization in Alaska. I guess that's my ignorance. But they presented this idea to the Board of Game. Is that right? That perhaps sheep and goats should be removed from the clean list in Alaska. So, Amy, what does that mean? Or maybe, Dr. Gerlach, it's more appropriate for you to answer. What does that mean to be removed from the clean list?
Well, to be removed from the clean list would mean that anybody who had a sheep and goat would have to apply for a permit to own one in the state. And then there would be certain regulations to go ahead and restrict where they could have those animals and how they could be raised. There were some proposed restrictions, like Amy mentioned, about having a so far distance from any known bighorn or thin-horned sheep or doll sheep areas in the state. They were talking about 15 air miles or 30 air miles, and there was some debate about that, and if they were within that range, that they had to be double-fenced. And so that there was a lot of talk of regulation before understanding what the issue and the concern was up here and the risk were up here.
Yeah. So that proposal was at the Board of Game level. Like the first announcement was, and I shouldn't say it that way. I'm sure that wasn't the first announcement. But when this started to be a hot topic, the idea was this proposition went before the Board of Game to remove these animals from the clean list. Can we talk in hypotheticals? What would have happened if that proposition had moved forward and sheep and goats had been removed?
So we'll take a step back initially, and the Wild Sheep Foundation has been moving forward on addressing this issue in the lower 48 lower 48 states in a number of different ways, and this is one way, is that they would restrict animal or domestic animals from certain areas where they would have possible interaction with wild sheep down there. The Wild Sheep Foundation went ahead and brought it to the Board of Game, not realizing that the Board of Game didn't have the authority or the statutory authority to go ahead and act on that.
Right.
And so when the proposal was brought up at the Board of Game, the first proposal was Proposal 64. I forget what number it was.
Yeah.
But I wrote a letter to the Board of Game and Fish and Game and told them that they really didn't have the authority to act on that, that
right.
they have to step back And so there was some further discussion, and that's when I think the first time where we actually had a meeting outside of those agencies, of the state agencies, and the Farm Bureau and the Wild Sheep Foundation came together to try to have a discussion about what could be done and what their concerns were and what the actual situation was in the state of Alaska.
Absolutely. And that reminds me, Dr. Gerlach, that we kind of just jumped right into this topic without even really introducing who you are and why you're one of the experts on this topic. So I guess I and Amy, it's like a friendly little conversation here. We're so familiar with who you are that I just assume everybody knows, but that's unfair. So remind listeners, Dr. Gerlach, who you are and why you're such a critical expert in this.
Well, I'm the state veterinarian and work out of the Department of Environmental Conservation in Anchorage is our office. And the way the Alaska statutes are set up is that disease regulation and disease response is set under the authority of the state veterinarian. And I'm hired at the discretion of the commissioner of DEC and
right.
work for the governor then to go ahead and propose regulations to go ahead and keep animal healthy as well as animal products healthy. Right. And that would include all animals, whether they're wildlife or domestic animals, yeah. All animals except people.
And thank goodness you're not responsible for that, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And just for the sake of how I traditionally run Ag Matters, tell listeners how long you've been in Alaska and how long you've been a veterinarian.
Okay. Well, I initially got my undergraduate degree at Penn State University and as in veterinary science, and then went to the University of Pennsylvania and graduated in 1982 with a degree in veterinary medicine, and was a specialty in bovine medicine. And okay. I practiced bovine medicine for a number of years on the East Coast, specializing mostly in dairy animals.
Yep.
Then moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and because Albuquerque does not have a large dairy population, I went back and did a postdoc in respiratory physiology and toxicology
okay.
at an institute down there. We moved up to Alaska in 1987, and I was in private practice up here until 2001 when the state hired me.
Okay, very good. So a lot of knowledge there, a lot of expertise, and you've been in Alaska for a long time. And so I appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today. Just a quick reminder to listeners that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit. Joining me in the studio this morning is Dr. Gerlach, and on the phone is Amy Seitz with the Alaska Farm Bureau. And Amy, you kind of come to this discussion with two hats as well. In addition to being the executive director of the Alaska Farm Bureau, you're also you're an owner of sheep as yourself, right? So you kind of came to this with the producer background as well.
Yeah, so not only is it important as the Farm Bureau, because we want to, you know, make it viable to own sheep and goats in the state, but I also come at it personally because I am a sheep owner.
Yeah. So which one of you, this is a question for both of you, and I'm not sure if either of you know the answer. It's kind of an unfair question. But when we talk about sheep numbers in Alaska, sheep and goat numbers of domestic flocks, how many producers are we talking about? Or what's the estimate on how many folks own animals and, you know, might be impacted had this proposition moved forward or had the discussion gone further?
And it'll be interesting to see the ag census when it comes out.
Right, yeah.
But the numbers are now, but the 2012
yep.
ag census had 106 sheep and goat owners
okay.
who filled out. So about 1,500 domestic sheep and goats on the ag census.
Okay. Does that sound about right to you, Dr. Gerlach?
Yeah. No, that hits it right on.
Okay.
And Amy's right. I mean, that's why the national ag statistics surveys are really important with
so
respect
important.
To farmers in the state, because it helps provide a background of knowledge for government to understand what we can do to help with production in the state, as well as what, if any, regulations are needed to go ahead and keep animals healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're kind of where we're at in the timeline now. So we're back in 2016, was it, when this proposition was first presented to the Board of Game? Is that right, Amy?
Yeah, it came over their March 2016 meeting for the first time.
Okay. And so the proposition was there. It kind of got everyone's attention. Farm Bureau, Dr. Gerlach, everyone said, whoa, wait a minute. This number one, this might not even be your issue to discuss. Number two, we don't know if we have a problem. Number three, we need to get producers aware of what might be going on. So now we're at fall of 2016, the Farm Bureau has their annual meeting. There's a lot of discussion there, and we're kind of pumping the brakes at Fish and Game, saying, can we talk more Wild Sheep Foundation about whether we even have an issue or not, right, Dr. Gerlach?
That's right. I mean, I think that was one of the things that you look at if you're going to understand how to respond to a possible disease threat. Then you have to know what your prevalence is or the population numbers, as well as the prevalence of that pathogen within that population.
Right.
And then once you know that, you have to understand what type of interactions they may have from that farm or that infected animal to another animal to be able to spread it. So
yeah.
It's epidemiology in essence. If you don't have that information, then to put in regulations are oftentimes inappropriate because
sure.
you're not hitting the mark that you should be.
Yeah. Why make rules and regs for something that may or may not even be present in Alaska? So that was kind of step number one. The Farm Bureau said, hey, we're interested in finding out more. We'll even put some funding towards finding out more. And your office, Dr. Gerlach, got involved in some voluntary testing, right, of the domestic animals?
That's right. We decided that what I needed to know to go ahead and continue the discussion with Fish and Game and address this issue was what our prevalence was. So we started in an association with the USDA Agricultural Research Station down in Washington State. They were working specifically on this wildlife-domestic interaction and decided that we would I'd make a proposal to them to see if they would help with the testing. And I also talked to the Washington State Animal Diagnostic Lab, or everybody knows it as WADL, down at Washington State University, and got both labs to go ahead and agree to the USDA lab was going to run our samples as part of their study, that they were a national study they're doing, so there was no cost involved. And then Washington State gave us a discount to go ahead and send samples down. And so we were sending down to two laboratories to go ahead and compare results and see how consistent our testing results would be. And then we started our outreach to producers to see how many we could go ahead and be involved in the testing. And it was not only voluntary, but it was confidential. So each one of the farms had a code that they developed on their own, so that the only person who knew that was their veterinarian and the farmer.
Okay.
The state didn't know, and no one else knew who they were.
Yeah.
And so when the results came out, they were protected in a way, and that gave a better degree of assurance so that there would be more participation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got good response, right? Quite a few producers wanted to be part of this.
Right now, we have almost 500 farms or individual animal samples and about 30 farms that have participated. And when you think about the statistics that Amy was talking about, the ag statistics showed about 50 to 60 farms, sheep farms in the state. So we have over half of those farms is part of the study.
Yeah, good. And when you talk about samples, are we talking about blood work or mucus swabs, or what did we have to do to these animals to find out if they were carriers?
Well, there's two types of samples. That's a great question, because there's two types of samples we wanted to look at. One was a nasal swab to see if we could identify the presence of that pathogen in the nose, and the other was a blood sample. And the blood sample was going to be looked at for antibodies to see if that animal had a reaction to that pathogen in the blood system, so that we could go ahead and see if there was a previous exposure.
Okay. And so what did we find out, or where are we now?
Right now we're looking at about a 5% prevalence rate in the animals that we have tested.
Okay.
And what we have known is we're sampling these animals at about a month interval, so we have three sets of samples we're taking. And what we are finding is that we're not finding consistent pattern. It's not just the same animal that's showing up consistently positive on three samplings. Oftentimes one animal may have it, then the next time we sample, two others may have it. So we know then it's being passed around within that herd or flock, which isn't unusual because of the close contact of those animals and the way this bacteria is spread through the nasal secretions.
Okay. Amy, as a animal owner yourself, I assume, and maybe you don't want to say yes or no, but I assume that you participated and knew quite a few producers that were participating. And the response from folks was good, right? They wanted to be a part of this. They were willing and encouraged to participate and share data, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the confidentiality part was a huge issue, you know, especially since things were heated on the, you know, the different opinions about it. People were concerned having tests, you know, and then not wanting everyone to know what results were. So the confidentiality was a huge issue. I don't mind sharing that I did test my herd. And we did get a good response, but funding was an issue. And, you know, access to veterinarians who could come out and do the sampling, or, you know, getting a vet out to remote areas is expensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know there are still people who would like to participate, but, you know, it's financially not feasible.
Yeah. And just another reminder, this show, I can tell already, has gone by way too fast. But another reminder to folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit. And our topic today is the wild sheep and goat hot topic of MOVI, M-O-V-I, this disease or pathogen that may or may not be present in our domestic flocks of sheep and goats. And I've got Amy Seitz on the phone with me, the executive director of the Alaska Farm Bureau and a sheep owner herself. And then Dr. Gerlach joins me in the studio. We're about two-thirds of the way through already. And timeline-wise, so a recent headline in the newspaper was, and I can't even remember exactly what it said, but it triggered this thought that there's new information, or now we know that perhaps the wild side of things, that this MOVI is present, or what was that hot topic, Dr. Yeah. Gerlach?
No, that's a great point, because that was part of the study. When we started testing domestic animals, we worked with Fish and Game and got them to involved with the same laboratory to go ahead and test some wildlife. And in the testing there, then there was the remarkable finding that no one expected, that there was a detection of Mycoplasma ovum pneumoniae in both wild goats and sheep.
So it was already there.
It was present, and it was not maybe unusual. The first detections were down on the Kenai Peninsula and the wild goats down there, and sheep up in the Talkeetna. So everybody said, "Well, that makes sense because it's close to domestic animals."
Oh.
And then as we started to go ahead, and they started to test other herds of wild sheep, the Dall sheep, they found it all the way up on north of the Brooks Range in areas where that were very remote and very. Probably extremely low probability for contact with with domestic animals there. So this brings up a new concept then for even in the lower 48, where the mantra had always been, this is a domestic animal problem and not a wild sheep problem. So, we have to address it at the domestic side, which I think the overall issue ends up being is that we need to go ahead and not just address this issue, but address the concept of this domestic and wildlife interactions, that we want to try to keep them separate. We want to try to keep those animals from impacting the health or the well-being of each other, because most of these diseases can be passed one from another, from wildlife to domestics and from domestics to wildlife.
Sure. Yeah. Well, fascinating. So now where are we?
That's a good question.
What's next, Amy? What are you guys doing on the Farm Bureau side of the equation now that we know that the disease is perhaps already present in the wild herds, and so maybe our farms aren't to blame, and from my perspective, then perhaps we don't need any additional regulations or restrictions on our farmers, right?
Yeah, and that's, obviously our goal from the beginning was to get answers before putting regulations in, so we don't put something that's not necessary in. Right now, we're kind of on hold. The working group kind of on hold. Fish and Game is going to pay for a facilitator to help the discussion. Sometimes with the various sides, it gets a bit heated, and some people are wanting solutions in place, statute or regulations, and some of us are trying to put the brakes on to get answers before putting anything that's costly to our farmers in place. So, it is kind of slow sometimes, it seems like, but I think it's really important that we get these testing results back, so we know what we're dealing with first before, having a solution.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we're also trying to, make sure producers are aware that we don't want contact between domestics and wild, because it can go both ways.
Sure.
Not just MOV, but other issues too. So educating producers on what's going on is a big thing too.
Yeah. So, Amy, if a listener were interested in becoming part of the working group or learning more from the Farm Bureau perspective, are you the person to contact?
Yeah, and email or phone. I'm always available if someone has questions or wants to figure out what's going on. I'm more than happy to talk with them.
Okay, perfect. And I assume that this will be one of the many hot topics discussed at the annual Farm Bureau meeting, which will be in November. Correct.
I'm pretty sure this topic will be up again in November. We did hear from Dr. Gerlach at what the update was last November, and I'm sure there will be a new update this coming November.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. So Dr. Gerlach, from your perspective, when it was discovered that, oh, look, these wild animals already have this pathogen present, was that kind of a sigh of relief on your end, or does it just lead to more questions and more data needing to be gathered?
Well, I think the second part, it leads to more questions. It shows that we don't know enough about a lot of these pathogens to just go forward and make rules and regulations. We need to understand that better, so that if we're going to have government get involved, it's on an efficient and effective manner, and for the good of both the animals and development of agriculture in the state. And I do think, you know, you keep repeating that same point, is that this issue is actually a separation issue of looking at what are the issues, what are the risks, and how can we mitigate that risk? Because there's just not one way. There's many ways we can do it, and we want to look for the ways that are going to fit both the management plan for the livestock and keep our wild sheep populations healthy.
Yeah, because hunting and big game sport has a huge economic impact on this state, right? I don't think it's fair to ask either of you what those numbers are, but we know they're big. We know a lot of people come to Alaska to hunt and recreate, look at those wild animals, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So it's not like agriculture is anti-hunting or anti-wild sheep and game or anything like that.
And many of our farmers are also hunters.
So, right. You know,
we all enjoy seeing the doll sheep and mountain goats.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But it's important that that we speak for our side of the equation for the agriculture industry and make sure that unnecessary or unfounded rules and regulations aren't put in place on them. So where are we now, Dr. Gerlach, in terms of the study? Oh, and this question keeps rolling around in my head and I'm forgetting to ask it. We talk about testing the wild animals. Does that mean that folks that had shot and killed a wild sheep or goat were then asked to bring in, you know, a sample from the dead animal, or were you testing live animals, or how did that happen?
Well, Fish and Game is doing both. They do normal surveys out for the wild populations, collect animals and collect samples for other disease surveillance. So they are taking additional samples for the mycoplasma of pneumonia. But they also have that as part of the, when you get a big game permit and harvest a doll sheep, then you need to take that head in to have it sealed. And during that sealing process, then they have been taking samples at that time as well.
Okay, very good. And then getting back to where are we now, or what is your office's involvement right now? Are you still analyzing more results, gathering more data?
Yes, we're hoping to continue to collect samples through the end of this year and this calendar year, and then we'd go ahead and present that data, and we'll probably take it to a third party to do a risk analysis to go ahead and determine, you know, what is the risk involved, what are the appropriate reactions to that risk that the state can take and defend. Because we need to, if we're going to do any type of regulation or any action on this, we have to defend that based on science, and we can't just take action based on fear or emotional components of our human side, worrying about things that we that may happen and try to look at it from that standpoint of science.
Absolutely. Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see, you know, what's next or what headline hits next, I guess. I'm glad to know that. I'm just glad to know that we're still gathering more information, that everybody's still back at the table. And, you know, Amy, sometimes getting a professional facilitator involved is a good idea when there's so many spirited opinions in the room, because everybody, we all come to the table with our own rose-colored glasses and see things from our own perspective. But I'm glad that you guys are both involved and that you're staying involved and keeping industry informed and up to date. And I would just encourage listeners, if they have more questions, to reach out to your office, Dr. Gerlach, or to you, Amy, and get involved how they can.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right. Check our web pages. We have a whole section on our web pages, and Fish and Game has another page on their site as well about the issue.
Okay. And quickly, Dr. Gerlach, your website?
It would be State of Alaska, and if you just do a computer search for Office of State Veterinarian or Mycoplasma of Pneumonia or MOV, State of Alaska, you'll get right to our site.
Okay, perfect. And we'll link to that when we record when we release the show's recording, et cetera. So I appreciate you both so much for being on Ag Matters this morning and giving us an update on this, I'm not even going to try and say it, this MOVI issue in Alaska. Dr. Gerlach and Amy Seitz with the Farm Bureau, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Amy.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.